Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Matt Miller from Bleacher Report to get his latest take and the latest news that he's hearing around the league about the NFL draft. We'll be with you on Twitter for a few minutes, then you can watch the rest of the show on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. And Lance, not a whole lot of news over the last day or so, though we do have the two off-the-field things that broke late yesterday. The Gary and Conley thing, very reminiscent of the Lyle Collins incident a couple years ago. Different controversy, obviously, but you know, it's a deal where something's coming up with a player a couple days before the draft that's going to be very difficult for teams to confirm over the next couple of days.
Well, and I'd also throw Laramie Tunzel into that too, John. I mean, he's another one where that photo appeared, and that was hours before the draft started. So, I mean, all of a sudden, teams that put a lot of stock in these players and think that they may take them in the first round need to all of a sudden go back and do their homework. So it's really an unnerving type of situation that I think is developed for both the players as well as the teams here.
And we'll talk to Matt Miller about that and a lot more. Let's bring him on right now from Bleacher Report. He's a good friend of the show, loves to talk draft with us. Matt, you got John Schmelk and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem, Matt. Let's get right to it. I guess we can start Gary and Conley because that's the most recent piece of news that's come down. How do you think NFL teams are going to view this? Are we talking about an undrafted player now, like we have at Lyle Collins a couple years ago, or could they get some type of clarity on this by the time we get to 8 o'clock tomorrow night?
I think there's a chance we get some clarity on this, and hopefully so. You know, for Carrion and for teams as they try to figure out what to do with a guy who was considered a top 15 prospect. So like you said, it's reminiscent of the Lyle Collins situation where you had a top player with some allegations come up or some connections come up, you know, the week of the draft, and it really has, you know, crashed his draft stock as of right now. So it's one of those things where you have to be careful because if he is guilty of these allegations, then, you know, he should be punished, and obviously playing football is secondary to that. If he's innocent, there is no worse timing for something like this to come out because there's just simply not enough time for, you know, his representatives, for law enforcement officials, for NFL teams to really get to the bottom of what's going on here. So the fact of it happening so close to the draft is really the worst timing for something like this to take place.
Yeah, certainly not enough time for the venting process to play out, as you just alluded to, Matt. Now, on the flip side, there's also players dealing with, I guess, a bit of controversy, not necessarily off the field, but because of testing that occurred at the scouting combine, and that's Jabril Peppers and Reuben Foster. From what you have heard, how have their stocks been impacted by those developments?
Maybe just a little, not much. It might be a thing where Reuben Foster goes middle first round now instead of early first round. And Jabril Peppers might go early second round instead of, you know, going maybe late first. So I think it will have an impact, but maybe not a huge impact like some people are expecting. And the thing is, the way it was explained to me by a team official was, yes, the tests were diluted, but neither player actually tested positive for anything. So it's not the same as a guy who would go to the combine and fail his test. Like, you know, I want to say Randy Gregory may have a few years ago.
Yeah, he did.
And that, you know, yeah, it had pushed him to the second round. So I don't think we'll see that type of hit for Reuben Foster especially.
One thing I've seen from reporters that know a lot of people around the league the last couple of days, Matt, is the idea of position scarcity kind of playing a big role here in this first round, especially when it comes to the offensive tackles. We know it's not a strong class, but there's so few of them. Are teams going to get worried that if they need one, they got to get one in the first round, or are they going to be out of luck? Could we see these guys maybe go higher than where they should simply based on teams' need and the idea that it's a very shallow class at that position?
I definitely think so, and it's funny you mention that because I just had a conversation with the team about that, you know, that we've said this isn't a good offensive tackle class, but if you look back historically, an offensive tackle almost always goes in the first round, or in the first 15, excuse me. So I think we'll see someone trade up to get an offensive tackle, maybe a bit of a panic, but we've also heard about teams trying to trade up to get a quarterback. So it puts teams in an interesting spot right now of how far up do you want to trade, or do you want to try to be patient? You know, if you're a team like the Denver Broncos at 20, maybe the New York Giants at 23, the Seattle Seahawks are definitely in play. Like, do you want to be patient and just see who falls to you, or are you willing to let that first tackle come off the board and then try to scramble up and get a player?
Well, and Matt, on that topic, I think another trend that we've seen in recent years, or at least this is maybe one of the unwritten rules in football, is you should never take a guard in the first round. But with that being said, you look at Zach Martin of the Cowboys, you look at Brandon Scherff of the Redskins, high first-round draft picks went into the guard spots and have become Pro Bowl players. Now, I think this is connected to Forrest Lamp, who I'm alluding to, but how does that philosophy perhaps influence this year's draft, given there's not a lot of depth on the offensive line, and maybe Forrest Lamp is the only ideal guard, at least at the top of the list?
Yeah, I expect Forrest Lamp to go in the first round. Maybe as early as, you know, 20, 21, 22. Like, he could go anywhere in that, you know, 20 to 32 range. You're right. For years, offensive guards were devalued. And then, like, that 2013 draft happened. And we had a couple guards go really early. And then 2014, like you mentioned, we had a couple more. And then Brandon Scherff. And now we have, you know, Scherff and Martin and Joel Bitonio and Kyle Long and some of the best guards in the NFL were guys drafted in the first or early second round. So I think some of that value will help a guy like Forrest Lamp, who, you know, when you sit down and put a grade on a guy, the grade is what it is. I mean, he grades out as a first rounder. So I would expect in a very bad line class, like you said, someone's going to make him a pick in the first round.
And we're seeing in free agency, too, guards getting much bigger contracts, so teams are seeing more of a value in that position. Matt, one of my favorite stories to read all year is your final draft buzz and seven-round mock draft column. We haven't seen it up yet. When should we expect it? And number two, what are some of the things that will appear in that buzz column that you're hearing around the league that could impact who's on the board when the Giants pick at 23?
Yeah, the final mock comes out tomorrow morning. The 7 or above actually just dropped this morning. I just haven't had a chance to tweet it out yet.
Oh, nice.
It is up there, team by team, like last-minute rumors that I'm hearing, my final big board. But yeah, as far as the Giants go, the last thing I had heard that I trust, anyway, is that offensive tackle or defensive end, or tight end, are the areas they thought they would go in round one. So because of the depth of this draft at positions like running back, because of probably devalues the linebacker position, everyone expects that maybe David Njoku from Miami, maybe Cam Robinson from Alabama, maybe Garrett Bowles from Utah are the guys that I've kind of heard are in play right there at 23.
Well, it's interesting you threw out linebacker because the Giants haven't taken a linebacker in the first round since 1984, Carl Banks. So I don't think anybody would be surprised based on what you just said, Matt. Of the three players you just named, if all three of them are available when the Giants are ready to pick at 23, who, in your opinion, has the most upside and would be the ideal fit for the Giants?
Well, I like David Njoku the best. The thing for the Giants, like you said, you add that in there. I would go with Cam Robinson. I think that his tape is a lot better than people realize because he kind of was so good early that the expectations were out of control when you watched him play. So I think he could be an NFL left tackle. With the tight end position specifically, it is a very deep tight end class, so I wouldn't feel pressured to draft David Njoku at 23 when you could maybe get Evan Engram in round two, or you know maybe you could get Adam Shaheen from Ashland in that same area, or in round three you could get someone like Jake Butt or Gerald Everett or Jordan Leggett. So I know fans want a tight end. I would love to see a tight end for Eli to work with as his career kind of rides off into the sunset here, but if it were me running the draft room, I would look at you know maybe going to that offensive tackle position and then hitting the depth of the tight end class in round two or three.
Overall, who are some late risers and late fallers in your mind, Matt, as we get to round one and round two of the draft? Who might go a little bit sooner or later than people think?
Well, I think Hassan Reddick has a great chance to go top 10.
Wow.
The linebacker slash D-end out of Temple. You know, you guys probably know Christian McCaffrey is going to go early. Jamal Adams is going to go early. Those are two big names right now that people are talking about, guys that like, hey, we got to get this guy. We got to find a way to get this guy. People who could fall, Jonathan Allen from Alabama could definitely fall because of medicals. Corey Davis from Western Michigan, the receiver, could fall because of the same issue. And then, obviously, the red flag guys that we talked about at the top, Darian Conley. At this point, I have him as undrafted. Unless something changes in the next 24 hours, I would expect that to kind of hold and be a spot where, like Lyle Collins, he's sitting there on day three trying to pick a team to go to that he can, you know, hopefully come in and be a contributor for.
defensive lineman is a position that clearly the Giants have valued, not just necessarily in recent history, but I think going back in time. And I think it's a position that, you know, perhaps they could consider in 23 based on who's out there. Of those defensive linemen, and I'm talking about like the Taco Charltons, the Charles Harrises, you know, who stands out to you? The Derek Barnetts, depending on if he falls. Who has the most versatility, Matt, that you think also would maybe fit well into the Giants' plans based on how they utilize defensive linemen?
Yeah, specifically for the Giants, I like Derek Barnett if he's available. I think he could come off in the mid-round, the mid part of the first round, and ask the Charles Harris, ask the Taco Charlton. You know, traditionally the Giants have like bigger defensive ends, so that's where Derek Barnett, Taco Charlton are more realistic fits in round one than maybe someone like Tackris McKinley or T.J. Watt or Charles Harris. So the good news is it's a very deep edge class, so if they want to wait until round two, there's a good opportunity to get, you know, a bigger guy like a Derek Rivers or Jordan Willis coming out of Kansas State or two guys who I think would be a pretty good fit in that scheme. And even in the round three, you can get, you know, Deshaun Hall from Texas A&M would be a very good fit in what they've been doing up front in New York.
Matt, final question before we let you go. We know you got a hard out at 12:15. Give us your prediction. We've been getting kind of a list of all our guys we have on, who the Giants you think are going to pick at 23. Who do you got?
I went with David Njoku just based on, you know, mock drafts are more based on the rumors I'm hearing and kind of the intel I'm collecting from around the league. I know I told you I would go offensive tackle, but I think when the call comes in tomorrow night, it's going to be David Njoku.
Got it. Matt, great stuff. I'll be in touch the next couple of days. We'll talk after the draft. Great work as always, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
That's Matt Miller. Bleacher Report does a fantastic job. And we'll have Rob Rang from CBS Sports, by the way, to wrap up our show at the end. So between now and then, it's you and us on the phones at 201-939-4513. Get in. We'll get your calls. Give us your predictions. Who you think the Giants might draft. And anything else you want to talk about with the New York Football Giants, get on the horn and we will talk about it. And it's funny, Lance. Unlike last year, and Art Stapleton was tweeting about this yesterday, and I've seen other people kind of tweet the same. Mike Garofalo, I think, had it, where last year there seemed to be a lot of, you know, whether it was accurate or not, there were a lot of rumors and news out there where people were pretty sure about who the Giants were targeting. I know it's a lot tougher at 23 just based on where they're picking, but no one seems to have those stories this year. It seems like, you know, whatever happened, either it's a lot of conflicting information or – the valve has been closed.
Yeah, I think it's been all over the place. And plus, I mean, you have the list of all the predictions from people that we've had on the show over the last few weeks. And the predictions are also across the board. We've heard offensive line. We've heard tight end. Those seem to be the biggest focus. Linebacker has been mixed in there. So I think you have a lot more variety than what we've maybe seen at this point in previous years. And that's all going to depend on how the dominoes fall. Somebody's going to fall that we don't anticipate. That usually tends to happen. And then here's the other thing that I think is going to happen. Somebody's going to trade up, which I think is also then going to impact what happens after that. For example, the latest storyline, I don't know if you heard this morning, is that Tennessee, which already has two first-round picks.
He's trying to trade down, right?
Correct, to maybe stockpile more.
Because they lost their second-round last pick last year when they traded up for Conklin.
Correct, and they look at it like other teams. There's a lot of depth. We get a second-round pick back. We get more quality to surround Marcus Mariota. It makes sense. So if somebody swaps with Tennessee and then all of a sudden they either grab a quarterback, then that obviously brings somebody back down in play for some of the late teens and early 20s.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have a lot more teams looking to trade down than looking to trade up. So I think you have a lot of teams making calls. Oh, do you want to move up in the draft? I don't think you can have a lot of those. Mike Silver, for example, who was in Cleveland for NFL Network yesterday giving reports, and I think he's going to be there for the draft considering they pick at 1-12, so they're going to have a big impact on what happens. You know, they've contacted, according to him, 5 or 6 teams looking to move up. And they're not going to have any shortage of teams that I think want to trade down. I think the Bears could be in the mix to trade down. If they're not in the mix for a quarterback, which from what I understand doesn't look like that they are. I think the Jets, who have said they're not going to pick a quarterback at 6, they're a team that could trade down. Heck, I think even the 49ers, if they can get enough to move down, I think they'd be willing to if they're not looking to pick a quarterback. So I think they won't have any problems, the Browns, finding a team to trade up with when all is said and done. And like you said, I think the Titans would love to trade down if they can find a partner. And that's kind of why I asked that question to Matt. Albert Breer had this yesterday on Twitter, and I talked to a couple other people, and they've kind of mentioned the same thing to me, the idea of position scarcity. And, you know, fans probably hear that word a lot with their fantasy drafts where, you know, in baseball you don't want to draft the second baseman because there's not a lot of other good ones, right? So the best one always gets picked higher because after that there's not a whole lot there. It's the same scheme and idea for offensive linemen this year. So like Matt said, are these teams going to say, you know what, we really only like one offensive tackle in this draft? If you're the Seahawks, who have a mess of an offensive line, are you going to say, holy cow, I'm terrified the Broncos are going to pick the guy that we're going to want at 20 because they also need a lot of offensive line help? Do I have to move up to 17 or 18 to get the guy that I want? And then all of a sudden, is there a run? And you know how this thing goes in the NFL. There's runs on positions, just like any draft. So I think that's one interesting thing. People talk about quarterbacks with the movement. I think you can have some offensive line movement in this draft because it's such a position of scarcity in this year's class.
Well, and look at what happened in free agency. We were talking about this earlier with the amount of money that was thrown around this offseason. So if you were one of those teams that just didn't have the cap space to do that, I think maybe you're even more aggressive in the draft in trying to move up to grab the offensive lineman you need because there's nobody on the market anymore. And if you don't address it through the draft, you're going to have a hole, especially if you need a starting caliber offensive lineman. But I think teams still need to be careful, even if you're in love with one particular player, you still want to get good value. And I think that holds true even for the Giants at 23, where you've got to balance the thought process of being in love with a player and needing to fill a need versus being patient and saying, hey, let the draft come to us as opposed to we aggressively move towards the draft.
And it's funny, and we'll get to your calls in a second at 201-939-4513. We'll get to your tweets as well at hashtag Giants Chat. I forget who tweeted this the other day, and I thought it rang true. And I think what happens now, once the hay is in the barn, as the expression goes, and the boards are set, and the Giants board has probably been set for a few days now, probably it got set last Friday or over the weekend. So you're sitting here, you're a scout, you're a GM, and you got 3 or 4 days. You got nothing to do. I mean, your board's done. So you're kind of sitting there waiting. So what do you do? You say, you know what, let me check some tape. And who are you naturally going to put the tape on of? It's the guys that you like. You're going to say, yeah, I want to watch, you know, I love Hassan Reddick. I want to watch him play, you know, this game in November where he dominated. Then you watch that tape. Ah, you know who else I really liked in this class? I love Christian McCaffrey. I'm going to go watch the game where Stanford whooped UCLA. All right? And you go watch, like, film of 5 or 6 guys you really liked, and I think that almost makes you fall in love with those guys more. So when you get to draft night, the GMs are sitting there, you know what? Man, I love that Christian McCaffrey. I really want that guy. And then you're more willing to move up, and you're more cautious about letting the draft come to you. And I do think that's the old carrot and the stick routine where, you know, you set up the trap and you have, like, the carrot under the box with the stick and you're trying to get, you know, Elmer Fudd's trying to get Bugs Bunny to go get the carrot. And, you know, sometimes you have to resist the carrot because if you're patient, you're going to get something just as good without risking getting trapped by the box.
Well, and that goes back to why it's important to have multiple people in the room with you.
Correct.
So that if you're in love with a player that you just mentioned, John, you spent the day watching tape of McCaffrey, you're enamored by him, but, you know, you have 4 or 5 scouts in the room that say, but you know what, these 2 other players are still available. Here's the positives that I see out of them.
And their value is almost as good.
Correct, yeah. I mean, you got to hear each other out at
that point
to the draft.
201-939-4513. We'll take your calls, and we'll do Rob Rank somewhere around 12:45, give or take. But as long as you keep calling, folks, we'll keep putting you on. So let's do Ed down in Maryland. He joins us on line one on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Is this Ed or Big Ed?
No, this is regular Ed.
It's regular Ed. All right. What's up, regular Ed?
We have to specify.
You know, the draft season is definitely my season, so I'm definitely going to call in now.
Great.
And I just wanted to first of all see, you know, I'm one of those guys that have a few targets in mind, and just like as the draft process has been going on, like guys' names have been rising, just crazy, like Christmas. I just, you know, I was thinking the Giants really don't need, you know, 7 new rookies plus the undrafted rookies, and I wanted to know how much what would it cost to possibly move up maybe 9 spots to like 14 or 13. And, you know, if you guys have a draft chart there, I was just, you know, trying to figure something out.
Well, like, Ed, you know what? The thing about it, the draft chart that's, you know, the classic Jimmy Johnson draft chart, which is kind of where this one has come from, if you want to move up 10 spots in the first round, you're going to have to say bye-bye to your second-round pick. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And then maybe a little bit more.
So as far as, you know, maybe giving up like a third and fifth to what do you think like a third and fifth would probably get us to if we want to move up?
What's the math on that, Lance? If they want to move up, let's say they want to move up to 15. How many points have they got to make up for
that?
Well, let's
see. The 23rd pick is 760 in value.
Okay.
And then the 15th pick is 1,050. So, you know, you're talking about a little over about 300 points.
And how much is the Giants' second-round pick worth?
Second-round pick for the Giants. What is their number? Their number,
I think,
for
they're 55.
55 is 350.
Yep, so you're looking at the second-round pick.
That's about the value.
And what does the third-round pick drop all the way down to? That would be about, I think they're picking around 87.
So
that's all the way down to
155. Yeah.
So that's not going to do it.
Second-round pick is about the value and the difference about moving up 10 spots in the first round. I think that's a good estimate.
And maybe you could get like a 5 or a 6 back or something like that in a move like that or something like that. But if you want to move 10 spots in the first round, you're looking at moving your second-round pick.
Yeah. Well, in that sense, I'm kind of hesitant on trading a second-round pick.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, especially in a draft that has a lot of depth.
And, you know, it's funny, Ed, you mentioned that. I honestly believe there's a chance the Giants' second-round pick this year couldn't end up being a better player than their first-round pick. I'm not sure there's that much difference in talent between what's there at 23 and what's there at 53. Granted, there's going to be 55. There's going to be some level of difference, obviously, but I don't think it's so big, or I'm going to forfeit that second-round pick to try to move up. I don't think it's worth the bang for the buck.
Well, the last two second-round picks, Landon Collins and Sterling Shepard. So, you know, look at what those two players have done over the last two seasons. I think that pretty much spells out what you're talking about.
I would even go back to the last four drafts. Reese has pretty much hit on the second-round picks for Hankins, Richburg. But the case I was making with Landon Collins, we actually traded up for him, and he turned out to be an all-pro. So, you know, I think the Giants have a really strong roster, and I don't think we would need, like, a whole new draft class of 10 rookies. So if there's a difference of, like, O.J. Howard, you know, if he falls out the top 10, which is still kind of possible, if he falls to maybe, like, 11 or 12, would you consider giving up your second and maybe fourth-round pick to go up there and get a pretty strong player, or would you just sit there at 23 and have to, you know, deal with, you know, borderline second-round players? I think it's worth the move, but it just depends who's there. So I'm just trying to gauge to see, you know, what type of, you know, what would it cost for us to move up there.
I think it's a lot easier, Ed, to move up in the second round than to move up in the first. If you want to move up only a few spots in the second round, I think the Giants moved up, what, 9 spots or 8 spots to get Landon Collins? That only cost them a fourth-round pick. So it's a lot easier, and I'd be willing to do that. I would not be willing to give up our second or third round pick because I think there's a damn good chance in this draft you're getting a starting caliber player in the second or third round.
Well, and plus, if O.J. Howard falls out of the top 10, I'm sure who's ever picking 11 and 12 is probably going to be interested in taking O.J. Howard at that spot too. So just because you want your team to maybe consider moving up doesn't mean the team that's in that spot is willing to move out of that.
If O.J. Howard got out of the top 12, Ed, I'd be blown away and shocked.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, it's possible he's a tight end. He really didn't, you know, have crazy stats last year, so it's possible. But my final point was as far as Jonathan Hankins leaving. I actually think that Robert Thomas played well when he played in Spurs last year. So I don't really think the Giants have to reach for defensive tackle in the first two rounds this year, because I think we have the answers right there on the roster. What do you guys feel about Robert Thomas?
Well, Thomas, remember, didn't start the season. He was dealing with an illness, and he was acquired right before the start of the season. And, you know, I thought that he flashed at times when given the opportunity. You know, the other thing to keep in mind, remember, and we haven't talked much about this, Ed, is the fact that Jonathan Hankins also contributed on special teams. You know, everybody focuses on what he did as a defensive lineman. Hankins had a blocked field goal attempt this past season. You know, he was a key ingredient on special teams. So whoever fills Hankins' void also needs to contribute on special teams. And, you know, Robert Thomas, I think, needs to show some consistency in that department because he's going to have to contribute in that area. But I think between Bromley and Thomas, you know, you're going to get an opportunity from the Giants coaching staff here to look at them very heavily during spring workouts and get an idea of what their strengths are, what they need to work out, and then if they bring in a young prospect. It's going to be a full-out competition. You know, normally you have maybe a front runner. I don't really know if there's a front runner between Bromley and Thomas at this point.
Well, and here's the thing that I'll point out too, Lance and Ed. You're only looking for a defensive tackle to play on running downs because when you're in passing downs, you're going to see Romeo Quara in the game. You're going to see Devon Kennard in the game. And you can see Kerry winning the game.
Yeah.
And any one of those three guys can go inside, by the way, or you can move OV or JPP inside. So I think you're going to see a lot of defensive ends at the defensive tackle spots and passing situations. But that being said, considering the strength of this draft, would I be shocked if the Giants picked a defensive lineman in their first three rounds of this draft? Absolutely not.
And remember, there's a few defensive linemen that have experience on the inside and the outside in this year's class. So they could very well, if they draft a player like that, then I don't know if you need to take that player off the field on third down.
Right. Just as Hankins was a really good player, I think it was underrated. But I just think we had a strong defense last year. So, you know, people will, you know, tend to think we can go into this year and not have to do much because we had a strong unit last year. But I think it'll be best for us to reinforce that and get a playmaker, either a linebacker or pass rusher this draft, just to kind of make sure that unit doesn't fall off. So Hankins hurts, but I'm just kind of, you know, kind of hoping. Actually, my favorite target for his round one would be Reddick. If we could get him to finally answer that question, a linebacker, I think that'll you know finally give us a playmaker at safety, cornerback, D line, and finally have an answer there via linebacker. So that's the guy I'm actually hoping fosters, but I'm hearing he might go early than 23 now.
Yeah, Ed, I mean, we just talked to Matt Miller, and he basically said there's a better chance of him going top 10 than there is of him dropping down to 23. So I wouldn't get too excited about Hassan Reddick being there for the Giants. I think he's having a Leonard Floyd-like rise up people's boards this season.
Yeah, man, he just does everything. He could cover, he could pass rush, he could run and tackle. And, you know, I just think we finally need to get an answer there. B.J. Goodson, I think, could be the future there, but I really haven't seen him play enough to really say he's the answer. But, you know, if you have a chance to get an upgraded player there,
sure,
you have to take it. Yeah, so
we agree.
I'm definitely excited, man. You know, I'm still hoping for a trade because as I thought I was saying, we don't need a whole new draft class of undrafted rookies and seven draft picks. So if the offer is there, I think Reese should jump on it.
Appreciate the call, Ed.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so much for chiming in. I mean, I don't know if you can necessarily say that you don't need to use your seven picks and bring in undrafted free agents just because maybe the starters are set. Remember, you want to bolster your depth chart.
So in 3 years, those guys you pick in the late rounds are ready to play.
Exactly. So, you know, you can't necessarily have the philosophy, well, this year we don't need a guy to necessarily step in day one and make an immediate impact. And I agree with you there. But, you know, having a fourth corner is important because maybe that fourth corner in a year or two is going to replace a DRC or somebody like that, depending on how the market plays out. And you want depth on the offensive line in case somebody moves on because contracts are going to expire. So you can't go into this year's draft thinking just about 2017. You need to think about 18. You need to think about 19. You need to think about 20. And that's how most teams operate under those circumstances. The other thing that I wanted to point out, based on what Ed said, he talked about the loss of Hankins and that, you know, you can't necessarily take for granted that somebody's going to fill the void. The only thing I will say is the distinct difference between when Hankins got out, John, 2 years ago because of the torn pectoral muscle, Giants didn't have nearly as much depth. And if you look at the players that were around him on the defensive line, that's why his loss was such a big hit, where the run defense fell apart. Now you look at the guys around Hankins, it's a completely different story. But with that being said, that's still going to call upon other people that are going to have to help in terms of run support because Hankins still played a big role specifically in that department.
And I'll remind people what Ben McAdoo said last offseason about the Giants' offense. Just because their unit was good the year before doesn't mean they're going to be good again. So you're right. Adding players is never a bad idea if the right player is available and the Giants selected out of the first or the second round. 201-939-4513. Just to remind everybody again, Big Blue Kickoff Live is every Monday through Friday at noon to 1. We're with you every day this week talking about the draft. We have two special episodes as well, one on Friday night at 7 o'clock, one on Saturday night at noon. We'll be taking your calls as we take you through rounds 2 through 3 on Friday night and 4 through 7 on Saturday afternoon with Paul Dottino and myself. And Rob Rang will be with us at the end of this program. Cliff in Philly, he's up next. What's up, Clifford?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
I would
love to see Giants draft O-line or D-line or both, actually. To talk about tight end, I just, you know, as much as some of these, you know, even the Njoku would be great in terms of having him on the team, I think that the way that the Giants have won in the past, the way they've gone far in the playoffs, the way the NFC East is built is O-line and D-line. And, you know, if we can get one of the other tight ends in the second or third round, you know, we signed Red Ellison, so he's got to play some, right?
Of course.
Yeah, of course he's going to play.
Fullback, tight end. Could see one of those two spots that he's utilized at, no doubt.
Yeah, so how many teams do we know out there over the past, you know, recent past where, you know, the difference between them making the playoffs and going far or not was a linebacker or a tight end?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, the Eagles, a couple years ago when they made the playoffs, their primary weapon was their tight end. Their tight end was their best pass option. I mean, the Patriots have made a living running two tight end sets, winning a couple of Super Bowls.
Carolina with Greg Olsen.
Yeah, so, I mean, there have been teams that – look at the Redskins 2 years ago. They won that division by playing Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis at the same time. So, you know, tight ends can be a big part of your offense. And you go back, Jimmy Graham, I mentioned Jordan Reed. Gronkowski obviously has been the Patriots' best weapon for a while. You want to go back in the day when Antonio Gates was Phillip Rivers' top target when they were a playoff team. Jason Witten with the Cowboys, obviously. So, I mean, look, Cliff, tight ends can make a big impact. I agree. It's more of a win up front type of league, I think, in general. But if you have the right player there and a tight end that can really change the dynamic, I wouldn't be against making that move either.
The other question I have for you guys is, you've been talking about the last couple of weeks about coaches that think they can coach up players. And
yeah.
can you identify who has played in the NFL that you can say, hey, you know, because he was coached up, he went from, you know, good to Pro Bowl type player. Are there any examples out there of players where that's happened? My point being, if there isn't, if you just stick to the board, isn't that really the best way to go on that?
I mean, any player that I think you pick late in the draft that needs some development is somebody that you coach up. I mean, how about Will Beatty? When he got drafted, he was a pretty raw guy. He developed into a nice player. I mean, look at Dak Prescott last year. If you don't think the Cowboys' offensive coaches helped him develop into the type of player that he was, they certainly did. Trying to think of other – how about Jason Peters? He came into the league as a tight end, and now he's a Pro Bowl tackle. That's a guy. I mean, Jimmy Graham was a late-round draft pick as a basketball player. And what was Antonio Gates, a sixth-round pick?
And he was a basketball player, too. I mean, if you want to go more recently, I mean, how about Terrell Pryor? Pryor completely changed positions in Cleveland.
That's a good
one. You know, he cashed in. He was one of the top free agent wide receivers. He's now in a new team, and he signed a short-term deal as an opportunity to make even more money. So, I mean, there's examples sprinkled around. I mean, even if you look at the Giants, think about some of the tight ends over time that they brought in. Jake Ballard. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a household name, but there have been players, Amon Bradshaw, late-round pick, who, you know, made the most of his time here with the Giants.
But Andrew Adams.
Yeah. So there's been plenty of examples, I think, across the board, especially late-round picks, undrafted players. Victor Cruz would be another one.
Oh, that's a really good one. Victor Cruz, that's a good one.
So, you know, there's been tons of them.
Last question. How much will teams scout for the next year when they're heading into this draft? You've talked about the quarterbacks not being maybe quite as good as they have been in the past. So, you know, you're talking about certain positions where, you know, there's a lot of good tight ends out there. There's good D-line. There's good players at certain positions. How much do the teams look to the next year and say, you know what, We don't need to reach, or we don't need to pull that trigger, because we're going to have more opportunities next year?
I think that'll vary from team to team, but I do think that's dangerous too. For example, last year when we talked about the quarterback class with, you know, Carson Wentz and Goff, what do we hear about? Oh, don't pick a quarterback this year. Next year's quarterback's class is going to be really, really good. And now all of a sudden people are like, hey, don't pick a quarterback this year. Next year's quarterback class is the kid from USC, maybe the Rosen kid from UCLA. That's going to be the quarterback class. So I think teams do it a little bit, but I also do think it's dangerous, because you don't know how kids in college are going to develop from year to year. You might think it's going to be a stronger class, but it might not end up being a stronger class. But, yeah, I mean, I think teams do look ahead a little bit. But I think it's more about the talent of the kids that they have the option of drafting now. And that's the determining factor in where they're going to go. Now, I do think, for example, teams look ahead to this year's draft. For example, like Lance made the point earlier with offensive linemen, teams are much more aggressive in free agency going after even mediocre offensive linemen because they knew the draft class wasn't strong. But I don't think teams are going to make big draft decisions based on what they think next year's class is going to look like.
I mean, scouts are focusing more on the players that are coming out for that year's draft. But, I mean, they're not naive and overlooking some of the other players in the younger classes. I mean, they may take notice of some of the players that are coming down the road, but I mean, it goes back to Cliff, what John alluded to. You don't know, even if you think that there's about 7 or 8 great quarterbacks in next year's class, what happens if 3 of them get hurt this season?
Remember, at this time last year, and I said this yesterday when we were talking to Art Stapleton, people were saying Brad Kyle was going to be the first overall pick in the draft.
And look how that's changed.
And he's going to be in the 7th quarterback taken. I mean, it's crazy.
The conversation changes so much because of the landscape of college football. And, you know, guys get hurt, and that changes the dialogue as well. So I don't think you could ever bank and say we're going to avoid the quarterback position this year because we're going to be okay next year. And you don't know how free agency is going to play out, too. I mean, there could be somebody that all of a sudden gets let go from a team that you were very high on when you initially scouted them, and then you don't need a quarterback in the draft anymore.
Yep. Hey, good points. Great. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Hey, good points. Good questions from you, Cliff. We appreciate you listening to me and part of the show. Andre in Rochester, he's up next. Hey, Andre, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, nothing much, guys. I've been tweeting you guys and Paul about Jabril Peppers, and I don't see any way logical that you could leave him on the board at 23, especially the way Steve likes to run his defense. You know what I mean? What's wrong with having 2 Landon Collins on the field?
Because you want to have one safety that can play the deep center field position and cover?
I think he could do that.
He hasn't proven it in college, though. He played linebacker in college, and he had no plays on the ball in coverage.
There's film of them out there playing cornerback, too.
He played a little bit in the slot, but what he did in college is very different than asking the kid to go there and be a center fielder. You're talking about a kid playing within 5 yards of the football to playing 20 yards away from the football. It's a big, big change. Now, if you want to roll the dice and try to do that in the second round, yeah, sure, maybe I'd be willing to roll the dice on that. I'm not using a first round pick on a kid where I'm going to make him do something in the pros he's never really done before and hope it works out. I think, to me, that's way too risky, in my opinion.
Using him on multiple fronts, given that we struggled so much in the red zone. We really didn't return the ball well in punt coverage. You know, I don't think we had a touchdown last year.
Well, I mean, I don't think he would affect – I mean, the Giants' red zone defense was strong last year. Yeah,
I'm talking about
on offense.
Oh, you want to use him as an offensive player
position
now.
He's talking about to get – the offense started in better field position. But, I mean, I still think there's viable options on the roster that can return kickoffs and punts.
Find a return man later in the draft, too.
I'm not drafting somebody in the first round, to answer your question, Andre, just so I could have him return punts and kickoffs. I mean, there's got to be more than I'm going to get out of him. I think that's the icing on the cake. If I look at the player as a starting caliber linebacker / safety, and then, oh, by the way, I can mix him into the punt and kickoff returns, then I think that's a much stronger case to take him in the first round. But if the main appeal is he could help change field position, that to me is not attractive enough to reach for him in the first round. And here's the other thing.
I think he can play everywhere he wants to play.
Well, I think he's a versatile player, but the problem is that Michigan thought he could play everywhere. And you know what? In college, it's a little bit easier to do that. In the NFL, because you also want to preserve a guy and you don't want to wear him down over the course of a game, you have to find some type of a niche spot for him. So you can't expect that everything that he did in Michigan is going to translate to how, for example, an NFL team would utilize him. So you'd have to find one position that he could at least thrive in. And the Giants right now, while you can argue that outside of Landon Collins, there's question marks with the rest of the safeties, they still have a lot of young options at safety, where they want to give an opportunity to Darian Thompson, assuming he can stay healthy, who I think could be a center fielder that could complement Landon Collins. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Nat Burhey, but there's youth in the safety group. Andrew Adams is another guy. I don't know if there's a dire need to add another young guy at the safety spot. That's my bigger point.
And Andre, even if you do bring him in, don't you think it's going to take a little while for him to get acclimated to play pretty much a brand new position?
Yeah, it'll probably take him a year or two. But in that time, you can use him in nickel packages. Put him at linebacker.
Are you a Michigan fan, Andre?
Yes, I am.
Now we get to the heart of the conversation.
I'm blue all the way.
You know what? I wish you would call up and try to sell me on Taco Charlton in the first round. I'd get on board with that.
Yeah, given though that last year I was licking my chops over Miles Jack, so now this year is Peppers.
It's Peppers. All right.
All right, Andre. Well, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it, dude. Good stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Michigan
appreciate
has
it.
A lot of depth.
Oh,
I mean, I would, if I were him, you could sell Charlton. I mean, I like Ryan Glasgow.
As a
late round pick. Well, that's what
I said. Michigan,
too. Yeah,
day 2.
Got a lot of depth. So, I mean,
Jordan Lewis is an excellent corner. You can play slot.
could have went in a variety of different directions. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily just stick to Peppers.
He loves Peppers. My feel, and maybe this is just based on Dan Salamone's Michigan hatred, being the big Ohio State guy that he is. Michigan fans get very sensitive about Jabril Peppers.
How so?
He's like, they think he's very good, and they don't like when anybody, questions
the potential.
Yes, what he can do. I tend to feel that's a sensitive area for them. That's my feeling from dealing with Michigan people.
I understand, but I think that we go through the same question marks when any college player comes out that has been utilized all around. Case in point, Shaq Thompson.
Of course.
We had the same exact conversations about Shaq Thompson.
And where did he go? He went, like, 33 or 34 to Carolina that year, something like that?
I think he may have went a little bit earlier.
No, you know what? Wasn't that the year Carolina went to the Super Bowl and maybe he was there?
Yeah.
And he was the last pick in the first round? Maybe he was.
Was he that late? You may be right. I know there were a lot of teams that were high on Shaq Thompson, but I thought he may have gone a little bit earlier.
Did they move up for him,
draft.
Maybe?
Let's find out.
Yeah, why don't you look that up? I'm curious.
Went to Carolina.
I could be wrong about
that. He was the 25th.
25th. All right. So about halfway in between.
Yeah. And Carolina found the spot for him to thrive. But coming out, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? What do we do with him?
Remember, though, he played linebacker in college. So he ended up playing the same position. You know, I don't care what you do with Jabril Peppers. He ain't playing linebacker in the pros. He's 205 pounds. So he has to play a different position. Shaq Thompson, people thought, well, maybe you have to move him to safety in the NFL. Well, the Panthers left him alone. They put him where he played in college, which I think probably made the transition a little bit easier for him.
I agree with you, but there were still question marks
because
he had such versatility when he was in college.
Right. He's a running back, too.
Yeah, correct. They moved him around.
All right, let's go to Chris in Texas. We'll do two more calls, then we'll go to Rob Rang from CBS. What's up, Chris? How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Good afternoon, gents.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, we're doing great.
Yeah, absolutely. How's everything with you?
Good. Well, I'm excited to get the draft over with, man, because I just want to move forward towards the season.
Yes.
I typically don't do a mock draft, but after listening to you guys and reading and everybody for the last few months, I decided, let me chime in on this. Just really based on the past experience, I just wanted to give my opinion for the first two rounds and then a later round pick.
Sure.
I think the first two rounds, I could see us doing the Texas two-step. I could see somebody like Tyus Bowser, reason why, freakish athlete, very versatile. We like versatility. He does address multiple concerns, such as the pass rush, the cover, as well as the run. So I can see that. I thought T.J. Watt might be in that mix, but I think the little injury history that he had in the past might shy away and probably give the edge to Tyus Bowser. That's what I'm thinking round one.
Okay. I mean, Bowser, and somebody, a caller made this point a few weeks ago, and I thought it was a good one. Bowser, very similar to Leonard Floyd in terms of how he was utilized in college, body type and things like that. So if you want to put two and two together, maybe that could be a fit. So I could see that. What's your second round thought?
Second round, the second part of the Texas two-step, I really could see Deontay Foreman. I think he's got a great high character. He was very productive, especially this past year.
Yes, he was.
He's a power back, which is good.
Well, remember, he's built like a power back, but he doesn't necessarily run like a power back if you look at the tape, which is the problem.
But he doesn't run the same Paul Perkins.
Yeah. Yes. No, he doesn't. That's true.
So if we get a guy, and I read the rumors about perhaps us getting LeGarrette Blount, I think that's somebody to learn under.
Well, no? I mean, you still, though, have a number of other options, though, currently on the roster. I just feel like if you add LeGarrette Blount, if you go with your hypothetical,
then why draft Foreman in the second round?
How many running backs do you need at this point?
Yeah.
You brought in Drone, you have Darkwa, you have Vereen, you have Perkins, and then if you brought Blount in, I mean, that's five guys I just named right there.
Foreman would be six.
Where's a rookie going to even have a chance? I mean, you're going to get to a point where you're going to hope that you can store a kid on the practice squad.
Yeah, to me, it's Blount or a draft pick.
Yeah.
It's probably not Blount, or, you know, maybe you could pick a guy in the seventh round or something like that, but if you're looking at a pick in the first three rounds of the draft, I would be shocked if they brought in another free agent running back.
Okay, then that's a point well taken. I would rather have Foreman than you know. I mean, we're maximizing the salary over the next few years also with Perkins and then him on those rookie contracts.
That's true.
The other thing that I'm thinking about, I really do think McAdoo's hell bent on getting a quarterback in this draft. And one person that really sticks out in my mind is the Tennessee quarterback,
Josh Dobbs.
Yes, Josh Dobbs.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at his leadership, that's proven. You look at his smarts with his degree. And he has that room to develop. He's not one of these guys that are going to be fighting for playing time the next year or two. So, I don't know. What's your take on that one? I could just see that.
Yeah, I like Dobbs a lot. I think some of the characteristics you threw out makes him appealing. The fact that, you know, he also has the mobility factor to extend plays. There are some question marks about his accuracy, but if he came into a situation like the Giants, you're not asking him to come in day one. He has an opportunity to hone his craft, so that's why I think he'd be a good fit. The other quarterback that I also like, Chris, is I like Nathan Peterman out of Pitt. Those are the two quarterbacks that I think would work well where they would be asked to be backups, get mentored by established veterans, and then maybe 2 or 3 years down the road have that opportunity to take over the starting job. Those would be the two quarterbacks that I think would be really good value in the mid to late rounds.
Thanks for the call, man. We got to run.
All right, take care.
Appreciate it. All right, final call of the show. Christian in Long Island. Christian, you got about 90 seconds. What do you got, pal?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
All right, so Giants value to run stuff in DTs to make teams one-dimensional and only make them pass. But we also need a DT who could provide interior pass rush. Is there anyone who can stop the run and rush the passer round two or below?
No.
And do you see a safety being drafted or one on the roster that could bring back that three-safety look that Spags used to love?
Defensive tackles that can do both are top 15 picks that can penetrate, rush the passer, and stop the run well. Those are rare breeds. Those are the Aaron Donalds of the world, the Jonathan Allens of the world. Those guys do not grow on trees, so I think it'll be difficult for the Giants to find the guy that can do both. Maybe Chris Wormley's a guy that comes to mind who's transitioning from defensive end.
Well, the other guy that I throw out is if McDowell falls, and he is falling, I think he'd be good value if you could get him in the second round.
He would have to be second. Yeah.
Yeah, there's question marks about work ethic. I get that, but I think he has the potential to do inside and outside work.
I think that's a good point, and people do think he is a top five upside of players in the draft in terms of physical ability. So I think that's actually a better answer than mine. I think Malik McDowell would be the guy you would target. And what was your second question about?
Do you see a safety that possibly should be drafted or somebody already on the roster that, you know, Spags can bring back that three safety look he used to use when we had Deion Grant?
I mean, you can mix Andrew Adams in there if you like, but frankly, since you have three really good corners, I don't think you're going to have much of a need to go three safeties, to be honest with you, depending on what you think of the linebackers. I think they're pretty happy with Keenan Robinson and Jonathan Casillas on passing downs. I mean, if you want to look for a guy that could be the third safety and I think play the role perfectly, I think Buda Baker is the guy. You know, he can play slot corner. He can cover. He can run around. He can hit. He can play safety. He's versatile. I think if you want him, you got to pick him in the first round. He's not going to be there for the Giants' second-round pick, obviously. So I think if you're looking for a guy that fits that role, you can look at him. I think Desmond King, a guy from Iowa who played corner in college, people think he might be more of a safety in the pros. I think that's another guy that could fit that role because he's versatile. And maybe Quincy Wilson, a guy who was a corner at Florida. Some people think he might be a better safety in the NFL. But, again, he's a guy you think you would have to get in the first round. He will not be there when the Giants pick in round number two.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Christian.
Got it.
All right, everybody. Now we're going to throw to our interview with Rob Rang. We say goodbye live. We will say goodbye again after the Rang interview. Just want to remind everybody that we have two special Big Blue Kickoff Lives this week. Saturday at noon with the Tino and I doing rounds 4 through 7. And then Friday night at 7 p.m. doing rounds 2 and 3. And, of course, Giants Draft Night Live will come your way tomorrow night on MSG Plus at 9:30. Also streaming on Giants.com. Make sure you go there for all the continuing coverage on the NFL Draft. Now we get a chance to talk to Rob Rang of CBS Sports, the Sports Exchange, NFL Draft Scout. Let's check it out. And now we're joined by Rob Rang. He's the draft analyst, of course, for CBS Sports and the Sports Exchange. Rob, you got John Schmoke and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys, as always.
Hey, Rob, thanks for being with us. We're only a couple days off from the draft here as it comes tomorrow night, Thursday night in Philadelphia. It all kicks off. So let's start here. What are you hearing? Who are some of the late risers? Who are some of the late fallers in the draft this year?
Well, late risers, I would definitely say Temple linebacker Hassan Reddick is a player who is moving up draft boards. He's an exciting player. We saw what he could do not only at Temple, but then at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, worked out very well. So wouldn't be surprised at all to see him go in the top 20, as well as the Alabama offensive tackle Cam Robinson. A lot of buzz about him. There's more athletic tackles in this draft class. There's very few that have his track record of dominance throughout his entire career. The Outlands Trophy winner, wouldn't be surprised at all to see him jump into the top 20 as well. And then, unfortunately, some fallers, all due to off-field issues. Jabril Peppers from Michigan, Gary and Conley from Ohio State, Caleb Brantley from Florida. Those are all players that had top 50 grades just a couple of weeks ago, but because of off-field issues, might be plummeting on draft day.
Yeah, you mentioned Conley. I want to follow up. There's some recent stuff coming out about that. How much have you heard about Conley and what's going on with him? And why don't you give the fans some info on Brantley, too? We haven't touched on him very much.
Well, with Conley, it's obviously a very fluid situation, but he has been accused of rape. And so it's a very serious situation, obviously, very much like what we saw with Lyle Collins, the talented offensive lineman from LSU, who wound up being dropped completely out of the entire draft and, you know, of course, signed with the Dallas Cowboys and has been a productive player for them since. That could be the same type of situation here with Conley. It's not just the seriousness of these rape allegations, but the fact that it's coming down here just a couple of days before the draft. NFL teams just don't have much time to be able to do their due diligence and really investigate this very serious charge against him. So that's certainly a story that we are going to be watching very closely as the draft approaches. And with Caleb Brantley, unfortunately, the situation here is that, again, he was accused of punching a woman, reportedly knocking her out and knocking out a tooth. And because of those charges of assault against a woman, there's going to be a lot of people very concerned about that. This situation reportedly happened just a couple of weeks ago, and again, NFL teams are going to be hard-pressed to be able to find the real story in time to be able to select Caleb Brantley, and that's why I think that he also had a chance to fall completely out of the draft, despite the fact that he, like Brandon Conley, are certainly first, second-round talents.
That's interesting. Timing is everything, Rob, as you well know, when it comes to the draft. Another name that I think is relevant to that conversation is Reuben Foster, the linebacker out of Alabama. Some off-the-field issues, durability question marks, the drug tests. What have you been hearing about him in terms of where he may wind up in the wake of some of these stories?
Well, I still think that Reuben Foster is a good enough player that he's going to wind up going in the first round. But you nailed it. I mean, he's got some off-field issues. And, of course, was kicked out of the combine itself initially in early March. And then wound up coming back to the medical rechecks. And some teams were concerned about the health of his surgically repaired shoulder, specifically his rotator cuff. He's had some concussion issues. And when you watch Reuben Foster on tape, he's an incredibly explosive player. And so for a guy whose whole game is built around his explosive tackling, to be having concussion and shoulder issues is obviously very disconcerting. And so that's the concern about him, is it's not only off-field issues, it's the durability questions about him. So I do think that he's going to wind up going in the first round. There's enough teams that need help at the linebacker position. I currently have him going number 17 overall to, you know, one of the Giants' big rivals, the Washington Redskins, and could see him possibly falling down the board a little bit farther. But again, I think that when you have the Oakland Raiders, you have the Kansas City Chiefs, the Detroit Lions, who all right there in the early to late 20s that need help in the inside linebacker position, Reuben Foster is going to go somewhere in that mix.
You know, Rob, you mentioned Cam Robinson before. How about these other two offensive tackles, Ramchick and Bowles? Because I think it's interesting. There are so few good offensive linemen in this draft. And you know, the top guys aren't, you know, your franchise type tackles that'll step in and start right away. You wonder if teams, knowing that the depth is so poor later in the draft in terms of offensive tackles, they might go extra hard after these top three guys since the drop-off is so stark. Where do you think these three guys are going to go off the board, and which, if any, are going to be there when the Giants pick at 23?
Well, you know, I think that one of them is likely to be there for the Giants at 23. But also, I think that the Giants, it's fairly clear that the Giants would like to improve at that position. And I think that there is a fairly significant drop-off after those top three. I still believe that Deion Dawkins from Temple, Taylor Moton from Western Michigan are starting caliber tackles in this class, and that you could get one of those in the second round and still be okay. But after that, it drops off significantly, in my opinion. A lot of guys who are just simply aren't ready to compete at the NFL level. And so I think that you are going to see the offensive tackles come off the board in pretty quick fashion, relatively speaking. But Ryan Ramczyk, in my opinion, is the most polished of the three, but he only has the one season at the FBS level at Wisconsin. But he is athletic. He is strong, and he's competitive. He's a good football player. Again, just the biggest concern about him is the fact he only has 1 year and is coming off of a hip surgery, so there are some concerns there with him. Garrett Bowles from Utah is the most athletic of this year's offensive tackle class. There's no question about it, but he's a slightly older prospect. He's going to be 25 as a rookie. He also only has the 1 year of FBS-level competition. And he was a player who was protected a little bit by Utah's scheme just because of the fact that they had the Morris Trophy Award winner in Isaac Asiata to his immediate right at the left guard position. The Morris Trophy goes to the best offensive lineman in the draft, or the best offensive lineman in the country, the Pac-12, And so because of that fact, they have some concerns about how much Garrett Bowles was protected in their scheme. But in terms of upside, Garrett Bowles has that. Again, Cam Robinson, I think, is arguably the safest just because you already know what he can do. This is a three-year starter, all at left tackle, former five-star recruit at Alabama. He actually reminds me a little bit of B.J. Fluker, who, of course, the Giants brought in. I love the size and the physicality of him. I think that he fits in best as a right tackle, a right guard type of a prospect for a power-hungry team.
Talk with Rob Rang, Senior NFL Draft Analyst for NFLDraftScout.com, partnership between the Sports Exchange and CBSSports.com. I know Bowles is the guy that you have pinned in at number 23, Rob, in terms of your latest mock draft. Now, you just went over his intangibles and his characteristics, but why do you think he would be an ideal fit for what the Giants perhaps need and how they could potentially utilize him?
Well, I think that he would make sense for the Giants specifically because I think that he has the athletic ability to be able to hold up against some of the speedier pass rushers. You know, with Eric Flowers, a player I still am very high on, I just think that his size, his physicality, I think projects better to the right tackle position, at least for some schemes. And so with Garrett Bowles, in my opinion, he would be an athletic upgrade at that blind side position. He does need a little bit of work, you know, as far as his technique. He was only a one-year starter while at Utah. But at the same time, just his footwork, his length, you know, that's really what intrigued you about him. Had Garrett Bowles been playing for 3 years as a starter the way Cam Robinson had, I think we'd be talking about a top-10 pick. But the fact that he doesn't only have the one season, that's the biggest. That's why he may wind up very well being a steal if he isn't being available at number 23.
We're joined by Rob Rang, CBS Sports, the Sports Exchange. Rob, how far below Njoku, and I'm assuming Njoku is your second tight end on the board after O.J. Howard, do you have Evan Ingram?
Yes.
And where do you think Ingram's going to end up going? And do you think he could ever become a two-way tight end? Or is he going to be that slash, you know, big receiver, receiving tight end thing type player for the rest of his career?
Well, it's I do have Evan Ingram, you know, fairly significantly, 15, 20 spots down below the board in terms of overall prospects, below Njoku and O.J. Howard, the number one tight end, in my opinion. The upside of Njoku is what's so exciting about him, kind of like we were talking about before with Bowles, the tackle from Utah, that Njoku is a relatively unpolished prospect, but his straight-line speed, his agility after the catch can really make people miss, and he is powerful. And so because of that, if you are drafting Njoku in the first round and you are banking on his upside, you're thinking that not only as a rookie, but as he gets a little bit more acclimated to a pro-style offense, that he is going to be that much better in year two, year three, year four. He is an ascending talent. Evan Ingram, on the other hand, is essentially a ready-made player. And I don't know that he's be able to come in and be that traditional hand-in-the-dirt, extra offensive tackle kind of a blocker. That's not really his game. I mean, he was basically an oversized slot receiver while at Ole Miss, very much in the mix like a Jordan Reed from Washington. But he is very competitive. He looks to block people. So while he may not overpower you, he is very competitive. He is a professional type of blocker. I think your team can get away with using him as a joker tight end to be able to help pin the defensive end inside. Just don't ask him to take on defensive end, 5'8" defensive ends one-on-one.
Got it.
Well, and that's obviously the biggest question mark for most teams if they want the dual tight end. They want somebody that can block as well as go out and catch passes. You covered the tight ends. You covered offensive line, two positions the Giants may focus on. Another one, Rob, is the linebacker position, and it looks as if, you know, maybe Jarrad Davis, maybe Zach Cunningham could both be in the vicinity of the 23rd overall pick. What is your feel on both of those players? Is there a big disparity, or are they pretty much neck and neck?
Well, they're just very different type of players. I mean, Jarrad Davis is a lot like Reuben Foster. He's just a thumper. I mean, his whole game is explosiveness. But the question I have about him is, can he stay healthy? I mean, that's been one of the only concerns that he has had throughout his career. But when he is on the field, he's a difference maker. But he has that kind of short, compact frame that is kind of a traditional inside linebacker. With Zach Cunningham, he has a frame more like a traditional 4-3 outside linebacker. He's longer, he's leaner, 6'3", 230 pounds, very long arms. He's agile. He's not necessarily explosive. But he uses those long arms very well to kind of lasso ball carriers to the ground. Very effective tackler, led the SEC in tackle by 7 years. So there's certainly no question about his But then, again, they have very different players. Jarrad Davis is the explosive guy who's going to knock you down in the hole. With Zach Cunningham is the kind of guy who's going to chase you down on the perimeter, doesn't have the durability questions. But you got a sharp eye, John. I think both of these guys are absolutely first-round caliber players and should be in the mix for the Giants, regardless of whether there are tight ends or offensive linemen available to them at number 23.
All right, Rob, last one for me, but before I ask you for your prediction, if you take need out of the equation, let's say the Giants are a blank slate, and you're sitting there at 23, and they were just solely concerned with picking the best player available, where do you think a logical option, you don't even have to give me a player, give me a position, or if you want to give me a player, that's cool, that you think the Giants would go at 23 if need was not a factor at all?
Well, of course, by trying to predict what the Giants are going to do at 23, you have to know what's going to happen in their first 22 picks.
Of course.
I would just say that the real strength in this year's draft class is on the edge rushers, cornerback, safety, and tight end. So I would say those four positions, no question about it, there's going to be some very talented players still on the board at that spot. I think that there is going to be an early run on edge rushers, but one of their edge rushers who I think could be available to them, who I think is going to be a fantastic pro, is Derek Barnett from Tennessee. And I don't know that he matches it with the type of guys that the Giants have selected in the past. They've, you know, required elite burst and great arm length. Those are two of the questions about Barnett, but he is the savviest pass rusher in this draft, uses his hands well, anticipates the snap well, and is every bit as good against the run as he is against the pass. So I think that he would be among the best players likely to be available at number 23.
How deep does the secondary go, Rob, in terms of corner versus safety, in your opinion? Because you mentioned that was one of the positions, but corner versus safety, where do you think, if anything, there's a major difference between those two categories within the secondary?
Well, I think depth is Mariana's Trench depth. I mean, that's what's so exciting about this draft class is that the corners and safeties are – the depth is phenomenal. I mean, now we have some guys who are first-round caliber players who may wind up slipping down the board because of the off-field issues we mentioned with Gary and Conley before, the durability issues with a Sidney Jones from Washington, Fabian Moreau from UCLA. And there's a lot of talented players who are likely to be on the board still in day three who in a normal draft might be considerations for top 75 picks. So I would say the same thing at safety. There's a lot of small school safeties that have the range, athleticism, and in some cases the ball skills really to warrant top 100 consideration in most drafts that are going to be available in day three as well. So that's really what makes it – helped this draft, 2017, stand apart from some of the past years where you knew you could find a starter maybe at corner or safety in the first round, but after that – you're kind of scratching your head. This year, there's lots of really good players who are going to be selected in day two, early in day three, that I think are going to be able to contribute significantly even as rookies.
Are you sticking with Garrett Bowles? I know he was your pick in your most recent mock, Rob, or are you going to do another one before the draft comes your way on Thursday night? And if so, do you have a different player you think might wind up with the Giants?
Well, I think Garrett Bowles is is a good solid selection for them, but I think that David Njoku, the tight end from Miami, makes a lot of sense as well. And so I've been kind of going back and forth on that. I think a lot of it's going to come down to the Denver Broncos. To me, the Broncos at 20 are a very similar team as the Giants, and that they do have a needed tackle. They do have a needed tight end. And so whichever player that the Broncos wind up selecting at 20 could very much dictate what the Giants do at 23.
Rob, great stuff. We appreciate the time. It's always good to talk to you, and we'll catch up after the draft, all right?
Thanks, Rob.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, always good to have Rob Rang, loyal part of the program, talking about the draft, CBS Sports Exchange, joining us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And that'll do it for the program. For Lance Mendel, for Paul Dottino, for our guest Rob Rang, and Matt Miller, we thank you for joining us today. And just a reminder, folks, tomorrow, NFL Draft Day is here. We'll have coverage with Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon. We'll have our first ever Big Blue Kickoff mock draft. And then, of course, the draft kicks off in the evening on MSG and streaming on Giants.com. You'll have Big Blue Draft Night live at 9:30. And then, of course, on Friday, you'll have Big Blue Kickoff at its normal time at noon. And then a special evening edition during the second and third rounds of the draft with Dottino and I at 7 p.m. Make sure you stay tuned for that. And then on Saturday afternoon at noon at the start of round number four, Paul and I will be back running on whatever fumes we might have left. So for Lance Mendel and Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Draft Day, right here on Giants.com. Enjoy it.
Have a good one.